No, he didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing, son, is racing.
And welcome, everybody, to the Locked On iRacing podcast. I am Peter Wilco Wilkinson, and I am joined tonight by the Locked On Lads racing team that went through Sebring. Well, the four best from the weekend, anyway. We would not say that either. We've got Braden Hamstring Martin. How are you going, mate?
Not too bad.
Okay. You keep talking? I was going to cut you off.
Sorry. I was going to say, I just had a good run around in the LMP2, which was bringing back memories of Sebring. So
I've got questions about that race for you. I've got questions. We'll get to that in a sec, though. We've got Buzzer, only 60 frames, Buzzer. So yeah. How are you, mate?
Yeah, lagging behind, mate.
Very much lagging behind. And we've got J-Mac. I've got nothing for J-Mac. He's just super quick and reliable and everything else. How are you going, mate?
Good, mate. Good.
Well done on the weekend, officially, you three and the other three that joined us as well, a race with us. It was a very, very good weekend. We'll get onto it in a sec. But we'll go back to Braden in a sec. You've just got off a race, an IMSA race, LMP2. You got five incident points and you lost SR. What happened there? How does that happen?
Use all of the track and then some to just make sure we got the P2. That's all. It was I think they were all at the same spot actually. So I think they're all at turn one. So just gotta sometimes extend the limits of the tracks to make sure you stay with the person you're chasing.
I'm just shocked that five got you a minus SR rating. That's what I'm shocked about. I would have thought for that long a race you'd be right, but obviously not.
Well, I lost safety rating at Sebring, so that goes to show how my safety rating's going.
You weren't very safe at Sebring, but we'll get to that in a moment too. But J-Mac, how are you? What have you been racing at the moment, mate?
So we've just exited ourselves out of some league racing, out of the 8-6. We had a good season in it, but decided to pull the pin on that. And now I suppose with a few of us now, we're focused on the LMP2 for more enduros than sprint racing now.
I have not even looked at the enduro calendar except to find out when I can't race, which is the Le Mans race. What is our next one physically on the calendar coming up?
Watkins Glen, I think, comes up next. Well, Nürburgring 24 for those that have interest in it. But then I think we've got Watkins Glen was the next one after that, 6 hour around there.
Okay. That's what I've got to start practicing for when I'm back to racing after the weekend, which
I think we spoke about that you're driving a real car.
Oh, is that when?
I think that might be majors. I think majors comes the week before Watkins Glen.
Majors is the one.
Yeah.
And then,
I'm Watkins deciding Glen's brownie points are needed for the 10 days away that I'm going to be. So the weekend before saying, hey, I'm doing an enduro 24-hour race is probably not the smartest idea. So we're going to go with that. So, I'll miss out on both of them. So, the Nürburgring 24 is my next one that I'm going to start practicing for, as well as the Bathurst 1000 I'll start putting some laps in for. So, that brings me to Buzzer, mate. How are you? You racing these Gen 3 cars yet or not yet?
Oh, no. No? I wish. Hopefully, we get it before the 1000.
Throw
a spanner into our preparation for that.
So, what have you been racing besides beating Braden at his fastest laps?
Yeah, so there is a bit of a ongoing war for Portimao at the minute, but I'll probably lose out to that. But yeah, just the LMP2 after Sebring, been enjoying the car so that I continue on with it.
It's a fun car to drive. Like I found it, obviously we'll talk about GTPs in a sec, but it was definitely the most safe car to drive in the wet during Sebring. In our race, there was only one GTP car that got home ahead of the LMP2s. So that showed you a bit of it. But it was just, I loved how they stick to the corners and how you can go really fast around these corners in the LMP2. But I hadn't driven much of it. Braden's been shouting out about the LMP2 for a long time, haven't you, Braden?
Yeah, since way before the GTPs even existed, and tried to convince some people to drive it in enduros many times, and everyone turned their nose up at it and said, no, we'll stick to the GT3. LMP2's too fast. We're going to crash. Now everyone's on the bandwagon. So I mean, granted, they did make it a little bit slower for everyone, but when they introduced the GTPs, but no, it's a great car. It's super, super fun. It's you know, got great feedback. It's relatively easy to drive, but still pretty challenging to drive fast. You know, there's a pretty big gulf between the really quick guys and us still. But it's just a super fun car to drive. If anyone doesn't own it, and I think there were concerns maybe at one point it might become a little bit redundant once the GTP came out. But after the way people have seen them in the wet, I think it's actually improved the popularity of the LMP2 a little bit, to be honest.
100%. I think every split I jumped into in IMSA leading up, and especially the week before, the LMP2s were full, and the GTPs were thinning out, and the GT3s weren't thinning out, but you could see the gap of the I rating was very different. Like the I rating always seemed to be higher in the LMP2s, as if we were higher up on the splits or something like that. But it's good to see. Now I want to start with J-Mac on, because this episode, I don't know if we even introduced, I'm so tight. I don't know if we introduced this episode as just a Sebring recap from the 12-hour, the first ever iRacing special event to include weather, and geez, included weather from the start. It was a fun, fun day of racing, 12 hours. And J-Mac, I want to start with, what were your expectations going into the Sebring 12-hour being the first weather event? And I guess, how many enduros have you done with Locked On so far?
I can't think how many Locked On enduros I've done. I've done a couple of Petit Le Mans. We've done Spa 24, Watkins Glen. It's probably nearly four, five, maybe six enduros.
Yeah. So what was your expectations is the word I'm trying to spit out, going to Sebring?
For us, the four of us that were in our car, actually was expecting to do quite well, because I knew where our I rating probably put us was actually in a spot where all four of us could actually hold our own and actually compete against a lot of the people that were there. If a couple of us were a little bit slower, we weren't that much slower that the other teams would have a huge advantage over us. It was one where I thought we'd be thereabouts, and come the day, we were thereabouts, sort of thing. And I mean, even in the wet, Braden done a lot of the time in the wet, and Tim done a lot of time in the wet. But in the changeover periods and even out of that, we sort of weren't too far off pace with some of the guys who are actually much higher I rating than, I'll say, what Buzzer and I were. There was guys there that were 5K drivers, were within a second of a lot of them throughout a lot of our stints and stuff like that when we got the head down and pushed forward. So, yeah, we were quite competitive through it, and was actually it was good to actually get a good race in there.
That's it. It was a good race, and there's a whole heap of stuff I haven't done in this podcast. Bear with me. I'm not very good at this. First time I've done it, so just bear with me. We had team number one. I'm calling them team number one, made up by these other three gentlemen with me, plus Tim Korn. You've heard from him before in previous episodes. Then there was my team, which was the throw together last minute people who didn't do a lot of practice. Me, Matty Mites, and Nathan Verney, who literally came out of back pain to sit down and fill in a few things for us, a few laps for us. It was really good to have him back with the team again. So thank you, Bernie.
I wouldn't sell yourself short on the not a lot of practice. I think I was going to say, if we go right back to the start of everything, I think the thing that I was most happy with and most impressed with this enduro was the amount of practice that everyone sort of committed to, and everyone that drove, you know, probably a little bit apart from Vernie, but we know he can be super safe and do a good job on a little bit less practice. And obviously his position with his injury and operation is, you know, out of his control. But it was nice to see all of the drivers who did commit to having a run actually put in the effort, and I think a little bit of organization for once, which is something I don't think we can normally say is a strong point of the Locked On team. I think a little bit of organization and accountability actually goes a long way, and I think it was kind of reflected in the results that we ended up managing to have. So,
look, I'll talk about it now. I went into this race, and I guess in the other enduros in the past, I've sat there and watched the likes of yourself, Tim Korn, even J-Mac, sit there and just do lap after lap after lap consistently. And no X's, no mistakes, no silly things, things happen. They just look calm. They feel calm, and they just keep on putting laps in. That was the first time in the races leading up to the Sebring in the IMSA races, I felt like I was on autopilot, and I was just doing that. I could sit there and chat to people. I could just sit there and do lap after lap. I wasn't quite there because when there was just traffic sort of got me there, got me razzled a bit. But as far as just doing laps straight after, I felt like I was almost in that groove because of the amount of laps I put in before. And I think the whole team was there this time, which we definitely haven't had in the past. This is the first time we were doing sort of a recap, mini recap. And I think that was one of my big positives from this race was the fact that our driving standards were a lot better now compared to previous attempts. And I think it was most fun because of that, because there was never a moment of getting frustrated or anything like that. When things happen, they happen. Everything was out of our control that when things happen. Where before in the past, I think we've put ourselves into positions where we haven't had the best luck, where this time it was just, we just had bad luck. That was the end of it. But I don't know if you agree with that or not. But Buzz, I want to talk about your expectations going into the Sebring. What have you done enduros for us in the past? I'm the best team manager. I don't know anything.
Yeah. So the first one I think I did with Locked On was Spa 24 last year, and then
Not because of you personally. I'm not attacking you, but wasn't best race.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Sure. Yeah.
Blankly. I think it was two. Was it 2 years ago? I don't think we did.
Might have been 2 years ago.
Yeah. I reckon it was two.
Wow.
Years ago. Jeez.
Really?
Well, then, yeah, I remember doing Petit Le Mans with J-Mac last year, and we did a couple of the gentlemen's enduros as well.
Yep. What were your expectations going into this one?
It didn't start off very well for me, so my expectations weren't very high.
I'll let you explain what happened to Team One the night before the race.
So in the week leading up, we'd been doing some practice and I'd set up a server with some AI and with some rain because I needed a little bit more practice in the rain with the new update with being able to see the brake lights and whatnot instead of just the white mist that they brought in. So we're doing that and I ended up dropping out of that server twice throughout the night. Just iRacing crashing on me. So a couple more days went past and then I was scouring over the forums and saw that there actually might be an issue there that just wasn't limited to me, but limited to quite a few with 2000 series NVIDIA cards. And I think a couple of others with some other graphics cards were having the same issue of iRacing crashing on them. So the night before, I sort of put it to the team that, I'm not confident that I'm going to make it through. And then sort of said, if you don't want me to race, I completely understand because I'm not confident that I'm going to make it through without the game crashing. But they all said, jump on. So we jumped on. Braden was doing his first stint. And then I was just wasn't in the car or anything and the game crashed. And jumped back on and I'll see how we go again, see if it goes down. But it went down probably 20 minutes later and I thought, gee, I'm going to have to pull out now. But then we're scouring through the rules and whatnot and saw that I had to do...
Of course you were.
Yeah, had to do the fair share laps. Otherwise, we got DQ'd. And at that stage, we're sitting in a good position. So Tim and I were scouring, trying to find solutions to limit the crashing opportunities and ended up locking my frames down to 60 frames and just putting most of the graphics down to low And that seemed to work. Didn't crash for the rest of the day. So I got through my double stint and jumped out and said, "You're all right, you three have fun. That'll be me." So leading in, expectations weren't high, but yeah, I thought we did pretty well. So sort of halfway through the day, I thought, yeah, we're sitting pretty good. So the expectations sort of rose a bit, but I was just glad to get through unscathed and that we weren't going to get DQ'd because everyone had put quite a bit of an effort into the lead up. So I would have felt pretty bad if we got DQ'd or if the game had a crash. But
would have got you to J-Max House, I promise you.
To add to that, Buzzer actually did say to us, "Boys, do you mind if I now go to the footy?" He was about ready to disappear and go to the footy.
I was like, "Yeah, all right, I'm done. I'm going to the footy. See yous."
Look, and to back up that story from the night before, Braden, how was your lead up to the Sebring 12-hour?
Yeah. Well, I also thought I was going to be racing on Saturday as well. So
I want a full recap of how this happened and what actually happened. So tell people what happened first and then how it actually happened.
Yeah, well, we had the sports day at work, and as is tradition, we always have a relay race versus our student leaders. Of which we normally beat pretty handily, to be honest. I don't think in the 9 years I'd been at this place, we'd never lost to the student leaders. And so normally, you know, I've participated most years, but some years I haven't. One other time, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I'd hurt my hamstring quite a little bit whilst participating, but it'd been all right for the last few times. But to be honest, I don't normally have to sprint, just, you know, run at a decent pace because we're normally winning. But that wasn't the case this year. The pesky little ones were a little bit too quick and were behind. So I kind of had to dig in and try and actually catch up. And yeah, just 3/4 of the way down the track, start feeling a pretty deep pain in the back of the right hammy. So I had to pull up a little bit to make sure I didn't do any more damage to it. And yeah, it was pretty much limping around and pretty worried that I wasn't going to be able to drive, to be honest. When I got home, the first thing I did was jump in the rig to see, like, could I put any pressure on the accelerator and what would it feel like if I put my foot on the brake? And it didn't feel great, to be honest. And then, yeah, had to go out, do some things, had been icing it pretty much all afternoon, and when I got back and thought, I've just got to jump in the sim and just see if I can do some laps, and went and did some practice laps in the wet, and basically whilst I was driving I was okay. It was just getting in and out of the rig that wasn't all that fun. So we got there in the end, but yeah, I was pretty much like, there's no way I could drive tomorrow. I was like, it's no way it's going to be feeling any better than it is right now tomorrow. So I'd already messaged the guys with the heads up saying, depending on how I wake up in the morning, I may not be there. So I think J-Mac was getting a bit nervous because it probably meant he was going to have to start.
I was pretty much going to have to, yeah, with Tim being out.
So yeah, but I set 3 alarms through the middle of the night and woke up at like 12:30, 3:30 and 5:30 to ice my hamstring to make sure I was doing everything I possibly could to be there. So yeah, all's well that ends well.
The kids won the race, is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, they bloody did. not happy.
So it's all for nothing. Okay, cool.
There's gonna be a new criteria to selecting student leaders. They're gonna have to be slow.
So what were your actual expectations when you finally woke up, decided to race? Buzzers deciding to be there, you got J-Mac and Tim beside you, and you hop in the sim.
I don't know. I don't really know, because in the LMP2, like, it's a car that obviously I've enjoyed but haven't really raced all that much. I did a few lead up races during the week, and you know, I'm pretty significantly off the pace of the fastest guys. But in terms of where we end up, it really depends on the split you end up, I suppose. So once we realized we're in like split 5, I think it was, of 12.
Yeah.
And we'd done quali and I qualified about 6th, which was my fastest lap I'd done at that point. So I thought, you know, anything can happen from here. I knew that the good, we weren't fast, but I think all four of us were pretty consistent and mostly pretty safe. So, you know, anything can happen in these races. We see how many incidents there are in all the special events. So I thought we were a chance to have a pretty good day.
Okay, cool. So we got into the race. So I guess my expectations were just purely, I just wanted to finish. I didn't have us going anywhere. I knew I wasn't on the pace. I knew I was going to be the slowest ones in the server. But I was consistent. I knew Mighty was faster than me, but hadn't done a huge amount of practice. But he was definitely faster than me, and he's always fairly consistent. And Vernie, like we said, laps after laps after laps. I just wanted to finish the race. That's all we had. That's all the thing. But then we pop into the server, and all of a sudden we're in the same split. And this was awesome. I thought, here we go. We're going to sit here. Better keep an eye on these guys all day. We'll know what's going on. I think I mentioned it about halfway or three quarters of the way through the race. I only saw you guys for a handful of laps. I feel like we overtook everyone and saw everyone 40 million times. And there was only a point where Vernie and Buzz were in there at the same time. They were behind each other. They came into the pits behind each other. Vernie almost took out your rear end. And that was it. You were never seen again. It was like we're on the opposite side of the tracks the whole day. Is that how you guys saw it?
There was a lot. There was a couple of times we were within sort of 5 to 10 seconds of each other. But yeah, it'd be certain times between pits and pit stops and things like that that it kind of done. We got near each other, but not enough to really race each other either. So yeah.
I did see Wilco when I was lapping him at the end of my second stint.
That's right.
You had to get that in there, didn't you? And that was after I'd been taken off the track in a very good incident that you guys got to see afterwards. That was the second one that happened. I didn't even get to show you the first one where turn one at GTP, I'm assuming it's on slicks at this stage of that race, and he's on my inside. I'm pulled out to let him go, and he just slid into my side and gave me a big 4X. I didn't go off track or anything, but obviously slowed me down. But then that next one, almost two or three laps later, same corner, I was just like, I'm out. But look, we got through. We both succeeded on finishing. We were 11, 12 laps off the lead. You guys, obviously, what, six you ended up with after the incident at the end. Fifth overall. Were you guys in the end?
Yeah, fifth in class.
Fifth in class, overall. Sorry. Sixth overall. I think we were 8 and 10. 8 in class, 10 overall. Out of 48 overall and 16 in class. Pretty happy with that. I think we're all pretty happy with how it all ended up. J-Mac, we'll talk about your incident. I guess yours was the only major one on your side before we get into Braden's one. But what happened with that one? Let's go
through. Yeah, so coming into Sunset with GT3 in front, he took the inside line, and which I really wanted to be on. But so I sort of braked in behind him sort of thing, and then found myself on the outside. And he seems to, you'd see him slightly in the replay, he was sliding out, towards the outside. Even though I was trying to sort of back off and not be in that position, I ended up in that position. And then, lo and behold, in the good old bit of net code put us into the wall, or it gave us a bit of a tap, and yeah, it was into the wall, bent steering, and went around for another lap to see what it was like. And it was just losing too much time. So it wasn't a meatball, but, put into the pits, and no required repairs, but 2 minutes of optionals. So we, yeah, took the optionals. It was about 15 degrees. The steering was out by, took the optionals, got back out. I think it put us two laps down at that stage. So it was probably one of those ones, as we discussed later on after it, just more of a learning sort of thing with being the quicker car, as Braden sort of was explained to us, back off a bit earlier, get yourself sort of slowed down, and then fuel saves a bit, but also you can pick your line. I could have gone around the inside, down the inside of him halfway through it, and away we would have gone, and we could have kept on going. So yeah, it was just an unfortunate one and a learning experience from that.
Other than that, like, you guys did really well all day. You were leading the race at one stage as well, which was a really good good part when Braden was in the car. You guys were first, and I thought, here we go, something's on. But unfortunately,
so did we. That...
No, I mean, that Braden handed it over to me, and I made the call in chat. I said, could someone please take over for me? I don't want to be leading this. But, I mean, that was right on the changeover too, between wets to dry. So we were tiptoeing around a little bit there. And
I feel like we'll talk about the start of the race in a sec. Like I said, I'm exhausted at the moment, and my brain's a lot. We've got no run sheet, everyone. We're just talking. The start of the race was very interesting. What I found was, and what I probably suspected before we go in, but I didn't really vocalize it too much, I don't think the dangerous section was in the wet. I think everyone was pretty good in the wet. Driving standards were pretty good in the wet. Everyone was sort of just happy to take it easy and get through the wet. The wet to dry transition is where a lot of incidents started happening, when people just went, I'm going to go early and I need to be on slicks straight away and get just blow away with this race. I found that was the most dangerous part of the race, that the two crossover periods. People were happy to get on wets pretty quickly, I think, when the rain started. People wanted to be on wets ASAP, but when people wanted to be off those wets way too early. Is that what you guys found at all, Buzzo?
Yeah, well, we had a bloke who was in front of us for position. Then they went really early on the slicks.
Oh, was that Dutchy? We called him Dutchy anyway.
Deutsch
payments or something or other.
And they went really early with slicks and were leaking. Like
it was 20 seconds a lap to us.
Yeah, 20 to 25 seconds a lap.
Yeah,
it was actually really interesting, because I was thinking about after they almost did pretty much a full stint on slicks before we actually finally put slicks on, because they pitted before us and a couple of laps before us, and we were basically humming and hiring. I said, let's just watch this guy for the couple of laps just before we had to pit. And he was like all over the place, you know, like off the track, off the track, off the track, creeping around, like you said, 20 seconds a lap slower, then 16 laps slow, a lap slower. And then Tin came in and we're like, nah, you just got to go stay on wets. And then it was almost all of Tim's stint before we came back in for slicks, once that car had finally got down to about the 156s, I think it was. It was
almost
154.
Almost a match between Tim's times on the wet tire and them on the slick tire that really confirmed that was time to go.
Yeah, but by that point, they'd lost like a minute and a half, just about. Like
I reckon they were almost two laps ahead of you at one stage, and they got back to you.
They were actually.
Yeah,
it would have been like a lap and a bit.
I think they were a lap and a bit ahead, and then we ended up being about 20 seconds ahead of them by the time we came in and switched. And I think we ended up coming out ahead of them after our pit stop. Like we had put a whole pit stop gap between them or something, when with them needing to pit again as well. So it was really cool, actually. It was probably the most interesting enduro thing to happen midway through an iRacing enduro, because normally by 3 hours in, like nothing else happens. Like everyone who's crashed has crashed. You're basically just praying for people that are two laps ahead to crash, but it actually made you have to think. So I pretty much followed watching that guy for a good, 15 laps, just watching him and watching his lap times and communicating with the rest of the guys, like, still not time to go in, still not time to go in. It was, obviously, the rain really added to it, as I'm sure we'll get to.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting from our car. I'd personally done a lot of practice, not a lot, but I'd purposely made myself do practice in that transition period. I think we set up that server that one Friday night of it started wet, or it started dry, went wet, and then went dry again, and we did the race right at the end. We knew that it was when the GTPs were matching our time was when it felt the safest for us, and we didn't want to go early. We knew going early was too risky, that you'd lose either damage into the wall or you'd end up losing 10 seconds or so just by silly mistakes. Well, not silly mistakes, but by just mistakes that were going to happen. So I was really happy we'd done that practice, because I was sitting there going, we're waiting, we're waiting, we're waiting. And it wasn't huge discussion, but it was definitely are we ready yet? I'm like, no, we're not ready yet. We're not ready yet. We want to see that time come down for the GTPs. And I felt safe out there on the wet in the semi-dry, and we were doing the some of the fastest laps of the race at that stage. Like, the delta was green for the rest of the LMP2s, actually for the whole field, because GTPs couldn't keep up with us, and we were safe. We didn't make any mistakes and all that kind of stuff. We could see, especially in that first one, we saw the people going off around us when they tried to go too early, and it was, I think we made up way more time on anyone at that stage than we were up to. I think we were up to seventh at one stage really early on. And I think we almost caught up to the guy you were talking about, considering we were battling for position with them for a while after you guys, after all that, after you guys went past them. So it was, yeah, like I said, it added to the race immensely. But let's talk about the start of the race. What were you guys thinking at the end of quali when you looked at the weather report, or you'd already looked at it beforehand? But J-Mac, going into it's quali, it's less race, what was the discussion like in your team?
I think the initial thing was it was dry, it hasn't started raining yet, let's get out there on slicks. If we got to get, if we get sort of half dozen, 10 laps in, and then we've got to change, we will. And we were watching that radar, watching that forecast, and we thought, it's a percentage possibility that it's going to rain at the start. And we thought, oh, we might get a little bit in. I think we managed a couple of laps.
It was one.
I thought it was two.
It started raining on the parade lap.
And yeah, yeah.
There was a couple people I'm sure went in on the start of the parade lap, but yeah, you guys definitely went in the first lap.
Yeah, yeah. That was, we put it in, and that was it. That was it. We had to be on the wets after that. Braden was pretty adamant. Yep, no, we can't do this on slicks, and you could see it. We couldn't be out there on slicks, so straight in, get the wets on, and thing is, majority of the field had to do that, so there wasn't a lot of loss. There was a couple that took the gamble wets.
It's actually interesting. They jumped us. I think we were wrong. I actually went back. I went back and watched my first two stints, and everyone pitted in that first section. So I think JRT might have been telling me fibs when we thought there was one car that was on wets. But unless they had an accident or something and pitted for that reason, everyone in the field from the LMP2s anyway, pitted in those first few laps. So, yeah, I think we're actually ended up being wrong on that. But, yeah, basically, I was so close to making the call and just saying, nah, I'm starting on wets. Like, it was back and forth. But because JRT was showing everyone else except one other car on slicks, which turns out I think they were also on slicks, we kind of were like, you know what? It's our first enduro in the rain. Let's not do anything crazy and let's just go with what everyone else is doing. If everyone else has to pit, you know, we're not really going to be at a big loss. So life goes on kind of thing. But I wish I had to just bit the bullet and done it, because it would have given us a good 40-second sort of head start on the field, which would have been, you know, pretty cool. But yeah, it was a bit like going around the parade lap, everything's good, everything's fine, and then we get to just after the hairpin and I'm like, it's raining what do I do? So it was a bit of panic, and I was going to come in straight away. The first lap was okay until about halfway around, and then you could just feel the rear was really loose, and I was like, I'm not doing another lap on slicks. I'm not being the one to put it into the wall because I didn't come in on wets and ruining everyone's day on lap two. So it was just, yeah, bring it in.
That's where we did the practice leading up to it, and I knew that it was okay to be out there for at least a lap or two if it was light rain. We went three laps. We pitted at the end of the third lap. We were the last ones to come in. There was three of us, I think. So we were podium sitting after three laps at one stage, and we pulled in. I said, nah, this is the point. I can't keep it straight now, and I'm losing time now. I think we got out to 2 minutes. It was just starting to lock up in a few too many places, and I couldn't control it. So I said, we're coming in now. The right decision now, in hindsight, is wets. Start on wets, and I think someone said it from one of the other chats post race or midway through the race, is if it's going to rain in that first 15 minutes of the race, you go on wets. And I think that's what we've learned out of that. But none of us had any idea. like it was a percentage chance of rain. It was green on the radar, so it was light. It was coming in. And I reckon it hit early. Is that what you guys on what you guys were thinking?
Yeah.
It seemed to feel that way.
And heavier than I think we thought as well, because it was like really light on the screen, like on the weather radar. So I was in my sort of head picturing like it'll start raining, but it will be light and the cars driving around will be enough to keep the racing line pretty much dry until the heavier stuff starts to come, maybe in 5, 6, 7, 8 laps or whatever. But like it was pretty much declared wet race, like a lap in, like the iRacing thing came straight up. And so I don't know, it's a bit interesting how the light rain is still pretty much heavy enough to start making it really wet really quickly. I don't know if there's a big enough distinguishment between
it's a long word.
Long week. there's a big difference between like light rain and real heavy rain in terms of what it does to the track. Obviously, it looks different on the on your screen, but what it actually does to the track, I don't know how much of a difference it is.
Yeah, we so this is bringing to the second lot of rain we had. We saw that one. It was light. It was blues and greens, and you know it moved in. As soon as I saw the weather for the second one that rolled in, there was yellows and reds in the front end of it. It wasn't going to be a patch of light rain and then heavy and heavier. It was going to be right from the start, smack bang, hit us. So that's what I said. We're making this call. We're on wets. A lap beforehand, a lap before this thing hits, we're going to be on wets. I don't care. We're not going to get stuck halfway around this track on slicks if this is going to be super heavy from the start. And then just before it's hit the track, it split up in the middle.
And the intensity went out of it. And
And all of a sudden, we're doing 3 laps on wets, and we're like, oh, shit, I've made the wrong call here. And then it pretty much looked like it went to my house where it just splits up before and we get no rain out of it. But then it did start and then everyone came in and then we were fine. But what was the thought process like over there for that second lot of rain, J-Mac?
I think we had Tim in the car, didn't we, Buzzer, at the time? And
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it was that sort of that it was almost like it looked like it was going to split down the middle, like you said, and go around the track a fair bit. I think we held off that little bit longer just because we were watching that and seeing that until Tim literally said to us, "Nah, it's I need the wiper on," or I could see the spray. It's time to come in. The spray, you can actually visually see the spray a lot more now. It's time to come in and change these over. I think that was partway through Tim's first stint.
Yeah, I think it sort of came towards the end of his first, or like towards this, maybe the second, the last third of his first stint.
Because we refueled him, put the tires on, and basically meant he done an extended double stint to do that one at that time.
It was.
Yeah, I think it came in with our we had an actual stop leading up to it, and that's where we thought we may as well just pit down, put the wets on now. I think that's how it worked. I can't remember that part of it.
Yeah, I think we'd been looking at the weather chart there, and when it said it was going to rain, would have been a certain portion into Tim's stint. And, yeah, it was one of those ones where we were just holding on, just watching it.
Yeah, it might have been the first sort of third of his stint, actually, now I think about it. Because I reckon when he was coming in for the end of that second sort of portion of the stint, like after he had come back in and got the wets on, was sort of when the transition period was starting to happen, and that was when then maybe some more of the fuel saving discussion was getting a little bit more robust, because I'm trying to tell people to fuel save, to try and stay out as long as we can, because the more time Tim stays in the car, the longer he doesn't have to be on dry tire, like it makes it an easier decision. Otherwise you're kind of forced into a gamble of going onto the slicks or pitting on the wets, because it's you haven't been able to go long enough, and then you maybe have to come back in again and change onto the slicks. So, it's definitely just brought a whole new sort of dimension to what discussions are happening during the race, which is really cool.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I remember because Mighty was in for us, and so we had a little bit of buzzer type problems over at our end too, which I'll get on in a sec. But yeah, we brought him in. We were concerned about Mitzi's VR. He had the problem earlier in the day. He did his first stint and was pretty much locked at 30 frames a second. His CPU, he had all the reds on his different CPU and graphics and all that kind of stuff in iRacing. They were all red bars and he was stuck at 30 frames a second. So he battled on. He got to the end of his stint. Instead of doubling, I jumped back in for him. So when the rain hit and he was in the car, we sort of made the thought of let's bring you in case the rain makes it any worse, which it probably wouldn't have in the end. So I jumped in and did the rest of the wet at the after he did it, a little bit of it. But that was a little bit of a concern when I've put Vernie's just jumped out of the rig because his back was hurt and he wanted to give it a bit of a rest. We've put Mitzi in. That's right. I went to have some lunch and I'm watching my stream and all I can hear is it's stuck at 30. All this other, I'm like, oh no, I've got to finish my lunch. I'll back in. I'll go again. He goes, yep, no problems, back in. Because that's right. Vernie was watching from his lounge. He just got up to rest his back. So I jumped in and did another lap and another stint and then he jumped in. But it was always that conversation. It always had something happening. And I think that first 6-7 hours felt like it went for 12 hours. And it sort of went a bit slow after that, except for when we had Shervo and Roy and all those. I think it might have been Shervo in chat at the end, wanting the weather report every 5 minutes because there was rain expected right at the end of the race, which we knew it was going to be an after race thing. But there was always that chance, like the start of the race.
Yeah.
What would have been better if it had started raining with half a lap to go? It would have been great.
It was going to be a monsoon when that hit.
We were waiting to see it because, yeah, that was just wondering. The one thing we're wondering is iRacing just going to throw that last little curveball in there? And it's what iRacing's been missing from these enduros is those curveballs. Not otherwise, every other year lately, it's been basically 12-hour sprint races or you do your stint as hard as you can and then get out and keep going. But, yeah, certainly was needed.
I would have – the only thing I think to make this even better is safety cars. Having some kind of a safety car situation would have just made this perfect. And I 100% agree this was way better than any other – way more enjoyable, way more fun, and a lot of that had to do with our preparation, but just the weather made it so – the best endurance or special event that I've done with iRacing. So it's a massive leap forward, but that safety car would make such a difference, especially – Once we had that first incident, which was literally coming around sunset, two GTPs had come together. One GTP had decided to flick spin it on as we were coming around the corner, hit the outside, meatballed our car just as we went past pit lane. The meatball came up, so I couldn't come straight in. So I did the lap around very, very icy conditions because this thing did not want to go straight at all. Pulled her in 6.5 minutes. And at that stage, that's the exact stage when you know I'm just racing to finish this race at this stage. There's nothing else I can do purely because nothing you've done, there's nothing that's going to get you back to six laps down. We'll get out of that. We're never going to win the race, but we're never then in the hunt for anything as soon as that happened. And that was coming in that first wet to dry period. So we were about 35, 40 laps into a 300 and something lap race. And this guy's flick spin and taken us out. So that was rather disappointing, but you know, safety cars can fix that up a little bit. I don't know how they trigger. That's the problem I've got, because I don't think there was ever a point, I guess when someone tows might be a thing, but iRacing's got that. That's the next thing they need to fix up. Or not fix up, but they need to add.
Was it someone in our team made the comment about if they were going to do something like that full course yellow or safety car, the lap or two before it had to have had a set amount of incidents across the field occur to trigger that or something to really make that work so everyone sort of gets something out of it.
Yeah, because there's a fine line. You do too many and it's just frustrating, like you're doing an oval race for 12 hours, or you don't do enough and it's just not, it's pointless. Like it doesn't make that much of a difference, but there's a sweet spot in there and it's got to have a reason for happening. I think, like you said, a certain amount of incident points or a certain amount of 4Xs in particular. But, yeah, there's something there anyway. But let's go on to the big controversy of the race. Brayden skating out of pit lane and going straight ahead because he wasn't paying attention to the weather conditions at pit exit. Take us through what happened, Brayden. What's happened since?
Yeah, well, I had the unfortunate duties of the the bookends of the race. So I did the first two stints, and the plan was pretty much to do the last three or like two and a half or whatever it ended up being. So obviously did the sessions in the rain at the start, which went really, really well. And I think I mentioned it to the guys, probably the most fun I've ever had in an enduro, working the way through the field and working my way past all the GTPs and just the changing, the way the track was changing and the times were, you know, so variable. And like you said, we managed to pull it in P1, which was pretty cool to say that we led the Sebring 12-hour over overall, even in the not the fastest class for six laps. But yeah, then I got out of the car and didn't have anything to do with driving until the last sort of 2 and a bit hours left. And obviously there was a little bit of rain in the middle of the race, but then there hadn't been rain for ages. I think J-Mac and Tim had done like, you know, 3.5 hours worth of dry driving, multiple pit stops and pit exits on dry tires, you know, completely fine. I jumped in the car and went down the pit lane and turned left where the cones are, and the car just didn't go left and just skated off into the wall and gave us a meatball that I managed to limp the car back and had about 7.5 minutes worth of repairs. So it was very strange because obviously the boys had done pit stop after pit stop, no issues on the pit exit whatsoever. Every other car in the field had done pit stop after pit stop with no issue whatsoever. But when I went to go out, I just had absolutely zero grip and just drove straight out into basically what felt like 100% track state rain, ice on slicks. So yeah, came back in, got the repairs, went out again, thinking, okay, I need to be really, really careful. Drove at like 50% of what I exited the first time and still came out of the pits just on ice, like, you know, full lock, opposite lock, drifting through turn one until I got back onto the section of the track where everyone's racing, and the car gripped up and was perfectly fine. Did the whole next stint, came in again, pit exit, super nervous, slid off again, you know, full lock, same thing. And yeah, for all four pit exits I did, the track was just horrendously wet, but only for me.
Only for you. And we did the pre-race or the post-race sort of breakdown where we all got back together and watched it. And in Brayden's, when we put it up on screen, Brayden's version of the events, you could see clearly in the replay, wet. Very, very wet. Getting drier as the race went on, but extremely wet. Even when other cars were coming out of the pits, extremely wet, but it looked like they had perfectly good grip when they came out. But for him...
Yeah, so on my end, they were showing as massive spray coming out of the back of their car, mm-hmm. but they were driving out of the pits at 40, 50 kilometers an hour faster than what I was exiting and just gripping up like a completely dry track. And then here I am, you know, fighting the rear end of the car while sliding sideways, trying to find where turn one ends so I can get back on the track.
But even then, when we went through other people's replays and watched the thing, completely dry, absolutely yeah. completely dry. But there's a car skating sideways, the full just skating with the tires turned locked, full left.
Yeah. So on Tim's replay, I come out and slide off into the wall, but no spray, no water on the track, no darkness of the concrete or anything. So, yeah, no idea why it happened to me. But my first instant reaction was, oh no, has everyone been taking this pit exit super easy and I've just completely screwed us?
Yeah.
But then, you know, obviously turns out it wasn't really my fault. But it kind of sucks because I genuinely think we were a chance for P3.
Well, you guys end up P5, we said.
Yeah, so we're P4 at the time.
Yeah, you definitely lost one position out of it. P4 was only within half a lap of you at the end of the race?
No, we're down by a lap. Yeah,
yeah. We actually dropped two spots after that happened, but then one of the other teams, binned it through hardware failure or something, and it got us back.
I pretty much had an error,
and they were out, but they got right back to you guys. It was pretty much, no, the guys in front, they're on the same lap as the guys in front.
I pretty much got right back onto the back end of P3, but to overtake them would have put us back on the same lap as them. I think I had a little spin, but I was pretty much fighting with them for about four laps at the end to try and unlap ourselves and get back on the same lap as P3. But yeah, it just sucked because like, I'd been waiting all day to get back in the car, and I knew I felt like I had pretty good pace and I'd been driving really, really well, and I knew I could fuel save where I needed to get any extra laps that I needed to get done. And then just to drive out of the pits and basically have, I was so psyched to try and chase down P3 pretty much in the, 10 seconds after I get into the car, have it taken away. It was pretty crappy, to be honest. It was very frustrating. So
it was gutting for everyone, but obviously, none more so than you. So I know the practice you guys have put in, and I know the practice you'd put in for something like that to happen. Just gutting. Absolutely gutting. But you've put it on the post on the forum. Did I see that someone else had the same problem as well?
Yeah. So I chucked up put the replay in of all my pit exits, and then also J-Mac's point of view of my pit exits, and then also my stream and Tim's stream showing his version of what he could see. Put a post in the report a problem section on the iRacing forums. Put in basically an explanation of what had happened. Posted it on Reddit, posted it on Facebook, and then also sent in a ticket to iRacing as well. So when iRacing support came back online, I think they're like Monday to Friday American time, sort of 9 till 5 kind of deal. On Tuesday, I got a message back saying, basically, thanks for bringing this to our attention. We'll forward it on to the team that looks at this sort of stuff and basically keep an eye on the staff announcements section for any fixes. And then later that day, had a couple of posts on the forums post that I made from a couple of iRacing staff members basically asking for some more information and saying that shouldn't have happened. We're not really quite sure why we're going to have to look into this because we haven't seen it before kind of thing. So it was kind of like, good, cool that it wasn't my fault. But then it's like, oh, come on, why? Why do we have to? But Spanish, I assume he's Spanish. His name was Fernando or something, not Alonso.
Wow.
Bloke had the same thing. He commented on my forum post and on the Reddit post I made as well, basically saying, had the same issue as well. So he uploaded a couple of replay files as well for iRacing to take a look at, but haven't heard anything back since. I did comment on there today actually, just saying hey, any updates on how this is going, but nothing yet.
Absolutely bizarre way to lose a race. Now I think we need another sticker buzzer. We've got the fan, and we've got now we're gonna have to do the ice skating or some description.
the new iRacing ice skating.
Yeah,
this kind of stuff seems to only happen when I do races with you guys. I didn't have any when I did the Tech One Bathurst 12 hours. Didn't have an X in 4.5 hours worth of driving. Every time I jump in a locked on car, something goes wrong.
Don't go blaming us, mate. Don't go blaming us.
So I want to get on to you, Buzz. I want to start wrapping things up because it's almost been an hour already. I can't believe it's already been an hour. But what did you take out of the Sebring 12-hour, and what was your highlights?
The biggest thing I took out of it was that
need a new PC.
Need a new graphics card because
Buzzing twice in the background, but she's got her headphones on. So I was waiting for it to slap over the back of the head. Yes,
don't
sorry.
Tell her. Don't tell her. yeah, but the whole strategy game has changed with the rain, and it just felt a lot different to the previous enduros we'd done, and that kind of made it one different and more enjoyable as well. That's probably the main thing I took out of it. And also it was probably one of the better finishes we've had. I've had in an enduro. And so that was pretty cool to be a part of, even though I only managed to get one double stint in, but hopefully
you did your
now
laps,
we've,
mate. You did your laps. That's all that matters.
Hopefully now we've somewhat rectified that issue. Hopefully iRacing can fix the issues that are going on, and then we can go back to how it was before. But yeah, I'm looking forward to having another crack at something coming up. But overall it was a good day, enjoyable, and brought up new challenges. So it was good.
J-Mac. Any your sort of thoughts on the race? Anything you highlight in particular that stands out to you from the race?
Probably just like we've sort of touched on, it's now strategy comes into it. It's not just get in, drive as hard as you can, as fast as you can for your stints. You now got to actually think a little bit more about what you're doing, keeping your driving and with your spotter sort of keeping an eye on that weather and just trying to think about it. I mean, the two stints I done both times I came out of the pits was changing from wets to slicks and having to the first one especially was trying to tiptoe around and find what I could and couldn't do in that drying line and that sort of stuff with a slick on and not wanting to put it in the wall. And then the second one we came out, we knew we were changing over that right time. I was actually able to push from the very outset knowing that I could, but still had to stay off those curbs and that sort of thing. Otherwise it was going to bite me in the ass if I did. But it added that extra thing to it that it's been missing for so long. When they changed it from tyres were done separate to fuel, and you could double stint your tyres to tyres and fuel being done at the same time, it lost something there. Now they've gained that back. That's how I see it, that it opens up a lot more things to think about.
That was the other thing I mentioned during the race. I would like to see them introduce a tyre limit.
Yeah.
I think that would be extremely handy to the point where you do have to try and double sim tyres at least a couple of times to get them home or have fresh rubber for the end of the race. I think that is another step that iRacing could definitely take to make these enduros a little bit more enjoyable or a little bit more strategy focused, which is what they should be from the start. Yeah, that's my quick thought on that. But Braden, mate, final thoughts on the actual race, highlights, lowlights. We've heard your lowlights, so what's your highlights? Besides Mighty threading the needle somehow and missing every single thing.
Highlights was definitely coming in P1 from the first stint. That was pretty cool. I felt like I drove really well. I didn't really make a mistake except for one time down at the hairpin, just locked up a little bit and had a little bit of a half spin. I guess, what did I learn? A couple of things. Like, we're pretty close now. Like, I definitely feel like, at least individually, I feel like I'm the closest I've been to being able to have a really good result in one of these enduros. Like, the Sebring 12 and then the Bathurst 12-hour with the Tech 1 guys and Tim have filled me with a bit of confidence that I can do the driving now and, you know, not make as many silly mistakes and things like that, which is cool. And the last thing, probably maybe like a little bit more targeted practice in the lead up to doing some things and getting comfortable without being able to like do things like fuel save and just understanding the intricacies of multi-class. I think maybe I've probably done a little bit more multi-class racing than any of the other three guys have done overall, which is still not much, but probably a little bit more than the other guys have done overall. And just that knowing how to, you know, I'm not going to get to this car before I can, you know, go up the inside. So halfway down this straight, I'm going to lift up and save a bunch of fuel and just get this car on the exit. Like, you cost yourself so much time if you get too close to the to the rear of a GT3 in the middle of a corner, and you know, it checks up your exit and stuff like that. So just like a little bit more targeted practice, and practicing some of those things so they become second nature and you don't have to think about them so much. I know Tim was definitely having some trouble remembering to fuel save. He'd be like, all right, I'm gonna fuel save this stint, and then he would do like one lap where he'd fuel save for like one corner, and then seven laps later he'd be like, I haven't fuel saved at all.
We kept reminding Tim of how many laps he had left, and then Braden be over the top, fuel save.
So just a few small things, but like I said, I feel like as a group we're really right on the cusp of having a really good result, like maybe finally squeezing a podium or something like that at some point.
Yeah, look, I think you have a look from our first to now, there's a massive jump, and I think that massive jump has happened in the last very short period of time. I think from our first one to the most recent ones, definitely practice wasn't our forte. Definitely preparation and understanding the data wasn't our forte, because we were just doing it sort of not for fun, but we weren't taking ourselves as hugely serious as we did for this one. I think this one was the one where we did step up, and I think that jump has been, you look at this compared to the first Bathurst 12 hour, but you look at this compared to Spa, night and day is the difference between that. And I think that's a huge plus for us. I think now we understand what we need to improve. There's also going to be light and day in between us now and us, hopefully for the, maybe not the next one, but maybe the next one after that, where we start getting things like fuel saving data. That last stint that I did, we knew we were close, but we definitely knew we were gonna have to do a splash and dash, unfortunately, which costs you a lot of time. Luckily, we had no one near us, so we had no one laps ahead, no one laps behind, so we were in the middle of nowhere, so it didn't really matter. But if it did matter, we were in trouble. So I was trying to fuel save. I was practicing, or not practicing, I was actually doing, I knew 3.3 was my fuel burn every lap. I knew 153s was where I started, 150s was where I got to. So the sort of last half of that last stint, I got myself doing 152s consistently. So I sacrificed that sort of 2 seconds, second and a half a lap, and I was only burning, I think I got it down to 2.7 at one stage, or 2.8 a lap. So we saved, especially in the last four laps, we saved almost 2 liters. So we got a 23 lap stint out of it, which we hadn't done all day. I think knowing that knowledge, we only had to save 3 more laps the whole day, and Mitzi wouldn't have had to do a splash and dash at all. We had to splash with 3 to go. I'm telling him, fuel save, fuel save, fuel save. And then we realized we're never going to get close. So we just said, burn it. Just burn it, and you're going to have to splash and dust, and that's it. But if we had have just saved 3 laps at any point during the day, it would have been fine. So the knowledge of that is, I think that's where the big jump's going to be. I think more practice, because I think more people are excited about doing it now as well, is the other part of it. So I think we're a group pretty much now of endurance drivers, and not so much league drivers anymore, but I'm really enjoying. I'm enjoying the fact that everyone's enjoying it again, and we're getting in and doing stuff like this. And I think also the longer stints is something that we've improved on. I think our first Bathurst 12-hour was about 8 people in a 12-hour race, and this time we were quite confident going in with 3 on our side. I think we could have done it with 2 if we really had to. But Braden, what did you want to bring up?
Yeah, I was just going to say one thing. I guess I shouldn't take credit for the working out of the, you know, fuel saving and learning and stuff like that. The biggest takeaway I took biggest thing I learned was doing the race the weekend before with Scotty Rankin, and watching him manage traffic and how he was backing off and how he was able to save a bunch of fuel. So he actually sort of inadvertently taught me quite a lot about how to race the car sort of the weekend before. So just doing those lead up races definitely get you a lot of experience.
Yeah. So like I said, I think we excelled and jumped forward massively in a handful of different parts of the endurance aspect of it, but there's a whole heap parts that now we realize we've got to jump forward on as well. And fuel saving is one of them. But I just, yeah, I was lifting halfway through a straight or well out from, and then just braking that little bit later, which was keeping my speed up and not burning it as much. It was good fun. Like that kind of, just that, even it made that last stint interesting just to see how much I could save. I think if I had done it from the start, it would have been a 24 lap stint quite easily. But that was really cool. And look, overall, don't do an enduro with me being the one driver not on VR and the other two people being on VR. They're hopeless at giving you data because they're in VR and they've just got no overlays and they've got nothing. So I'm like, I would ask them questions at the start, and then I quickly realized that they didn't have the information that I needed. So I just, luckily I had my race labs up everywhere. So I was feeding them data while I was racing. And the comment was made halfway through, like, he actually knows more than what we know. So I think Vernie ended up downloading iOverlay or something like that and got that working so he could slowly feed me data. But either have the data yourself or don't have someone in VR spotting for you at the time. That's my big takeaway from it. But look, we did really well in our team. Eighth overall, you know, second last of the cars that finished in LMP2. We only had two major incidents. And other than that, I think we did really well. I was really happy with it. I didn't expect any more of that. So, and I think we're very excited about the next one. So the next one that you guys are working towards is
Saturday.
Le Mans. Saturday. The Enduro, 3-hour Enduro, the boys are racing. So that'll be fun. Go catch it on Braden's channel. But the next special event is actually the majors. I think you're looking at for the Le Mans 24.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that'll be cool. And then the Watkins Glen after that. I'm down for some Aussie car stuff. There's an Aussie car endurance series that's on the 7th, which I may end up doing because I'm going to miss out on those ones because we'll be box rallying at that stage. So, or close, very, very close to it. So I might do that as my last sort of push and fundraising. But I don't know yet. I don't know where I'm going to end up except for practicing. I'm just taking Easter off and I'll come back after Easter and work out where I'm at and what to do. But thank you very much for your time, guys. Thank you for the 12 hours you put in. Buzzer, I can't get you to spruik your stuff because you don't have anything. J-Mac, I can't get you to spruik your stuff because you don't have anything. But Braden, where can people find you if they want to get in contact with you?
Yeah, just jump on Twitch or YouTube, either one. The 1D Wade is where you'll find me doing my racing. I've actually been pretty good at getting into a habit of just chucking the stream on every time I do a race lately, which is unusual for me. So you can go over and see it there. And if you want to hear me probably complaining about football or something, check me out on Twitter at Braden Talks.
Because Port Adelaide's going really good this year so far, aren't they?
Oh, we're undefeated, so yeah, we're not doing too bad.
Yeah, so what you can complain about? I guess
I still got plenty to complain about.
Now
he's from South Australia, he can complain.
That's it. Anyway,
until there's a Premiership Cup, I'll complain.
Ooh, could be waiting a while. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening to this episode. I don't know when it's actually going to air because you just got one, so I might hold this for a little bit. But anyway, thank you everyone for listening. Thank you everyone who watched the streams, the many streams we had going. And we will catch you in a week or so, and we'll do a bit of a mid-season catch-up and see where we're at as far as iRacing is going. You may get another interview between now and then, but I don't know. But thank you for your time, and we'll catch you later.